Hello, and welcome to Clamp, the weekly podcast where we discuss all things related to creating, living, and making projects. I'm your host, Grant Alexander, and joining me as always is Jesse Ratfink and Adam Mackey. I couldn't keep it up for an entire introduction.
I was kind of excited. I thought we might be doing like NPR Clamp. I guess not a lot of people would be into that, maybe.
Another mental health episode.
Yeah. So, Adam, what have you been up to this week?
So, I have decided that I hate the gold that I was putting on the black, so I'm going with a new color. So, the issue is having to put the clear over the top. I don't have the skills for that yet. Everything like didn't come out perfect. It didn't come out the same. Some clear parts were thicker than others, and it was so easy to mess up. Whereas the black I did, which is just one solid color, was perfect every time. The only time I ever had issues was when I was adding the clear. So I've decided to go with a different color, which is sort of like a army green sort of color. And I was almost about to smack a bitch. Olive green exactly is the color.
Okay.
So the good thing is, though, that with the gold, depending on how much clear you put on or whatever, it can change the tone of the gold. So it's really hard to get it all the same. Whereas being just a base matte color, it's all going to be the same, which means that I also got a color code for it, or an RAL code. So I could buy spray paint to match, vinyl to match. Well, I bought vinyl that is meant to match, and I'm looking at it. I get it out of the box. I'm like, what the fuck color is this? Like, it's so dull. And then I realize I was about to message the company, but then I realized that it's got this clear, well, not clear, but like this film over the top of the actual vinyl. And it is actually olive green. And I'm looking at it going, have they sent me the wrong color, or am I like, yeah.
So when I was in high school, we had a tech class, and in the tech class, there was a vacuum former, and in that class, like, you could do pretty much anything you wanted, basically, like no one was paying attention. So we would vacuum form stuff, but there was this clear blue that we could not, no matter what we did, we could not get this clear blue to vacuum form anything. We could use any of the colors and it worked perfectly. We're like, oh, we want this clear blue. Like, it'd be nice to have something that's see-through. Guess what?
Well, how to feel
leaving a protective film on.
Yeah, it was actually just clear, and it had a clear blue film on it, so we wasted this is where sometimes you need intervention from a higher power telling you how fucking stupid you are. And when there's film still on something, that's what you need.
I'd love to message a company and be like, hey, like, what the hell? It clearly says olive green. This looks nothing like the picture. And they just respond with, take the film off.
Oh, I've seen reviews. I have seen reviews with that. Yeah. It was like, it was my visor. I got lathe working, and it was visor, and it was, everyone's complaining, like, it's so dull and like you can't see through it. And it's like, cause it had a protective film on both sides.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I've already taken off the protective film. The company is like, did you take it off on both the outside? Sides? And then they're like, there's no other responses after that.
Yeah.
They're just
Well, I have never got vinyl that has a protective cover over the top. That's weird.
But it's because it's matte.
Yeah, maybe. And then the other thing I've been doing is, so my powder coating gun that I got, it is, so like you've got the box which generates the power for the grounding, like for the spark and stuff and all that. But connected to that box is the ground wire, the pedal, and the gun. There is, like, they're permanently connected. And it is the most frustrating thing to try and put away because you've got these four thick cords coming off it in all different directions. Oh. So I cut them off and have added kettle plugs to everything so that it's all can be unplugged and separated. Oh. So that's been a fun little project.
I don't think I would have ever thought to do that. You're braver than me.
Well, the thing is that I needed something that can take the high voltage, and I figure, well, a kettle plug takes like 240 volt normal, so surely it should be fine. But I haven't tested it yet, so
I'm gonna put update voltage next week. And amperage are the like voltage is important. Amperage is so much more important. I have no clue what a kettle plug is. It sounds like something for corn.
It's like a what are they? I can't remember what it's actually called. It's like what plugs into the box on your laptop.
Like one of those three-prong plugs?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's probably fine.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. I mean, it's made to take a power cord, so I think it should be right. And it's literally like two – it's just pins going together. It's not like there's anything to restrict the flow, so I don't see any issue to it. I don't know. And then the negative, like the actual ground clip, is just a banana plug. So that's just like a single.
Oh, yeah, plug. That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all I've been doing.
What about you, Grant?
Well, I was putting the fun in funeral. No, I don't know. That's just a fun joke of funerals. But yeah, I was at a funeral this week, so I didn't really do much. My grandmother, who was 100. And a World War II veteran passed away, and so I was visiting family and doing the grieving thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I vacuumed up my car. I don't know if you've ever seen like the TikTok. They take.
Yeah, I saw your reel.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if anyone else saw it, but it's like the bzz, bzz, like that. That's what people call it. It's like oscillating. So the oscillating oscilloscope, that's all I could say. There was an oscilloscope that came up on Facebook.
It has a
marketplace I almost bought. So the oscillating tool, you can like get like a sander attachment for it. Which is like a mouse sander or whatever. And it just like goes back and forth, but it's Velcro. So you can put it on top of your carpet. And oh my God, the amount of, one of those that,
multi-tool is called.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a oscillating multi-tool. anyways, that you put the little like Velcro attachment to it, and it shakes it, and like the vibration causes it to like all accumulate in one spot. But the video I showed is kind of cool that it like showed this like wavelength or whatever. But the point that it like really drove home to me that it was like something needed is the dead pedal on your like or and by the like the gas pedal on your car, it's always like covered in sand or salt. If you live in Canada, it's sand and salt. But so it was like caked in it, and that, you know, you'd vacuum it. And I got carpet cleaner, and I could never get it clean. And this thing shaking the living bejesus out of my carpet got it. So it looks, it's not 100% because my car has 250,000 kilometers on it. So it's got, it's never going to be 100%, but oh my God, it looks so much better. It looks better than it's ever looked since I've owned the car. And if you had any doubt about this, like TikTok science that I saw, and it worked for the most part, it didn't work in like super deep carpet, but it worked for like anything vertical, it worked great. Anything, the other bits, like it's definitely like shaking it, but it's not doing it as much. What they need to make is like a sander that has like a vacuum hose in the middle of it that just goes.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah. I guess like an orbital sander might do it, except for it needs to spin. So it needs to be
you could probably design up some sort of 3D print to attach to your multi-tool to.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a multi-tool. Any sander would work as long as it's got a Velcro attached.
Well, it's going
to
be an oscillating sander, not an orbital.
Right. any a palm sander, any old school sander, not a belt sander, obviously. But yes,
I did it with a recip saw.
Not a planisher, not a belt grinder. No, a just standard palm sander. That'll work. And a recip saw? Yeah, that would probably work.
That didn't work as good as your video looked to work, so I might try the sander instead.
Yeah, it's just like it's a giant – like so other spots, it didn't work as good. That spot that I showed was the first spot I did, took the video, posted the video, and then later went to other spots, and I was like, fuck, this didn't – like, you know, it didn't work as good. But, like, I'd already posted the video, and it did work. It worked great on, like, the verticals bits. Like the dead pedal on your car. So definitely been.
So dead pedal is carpet in your car? Because mine are all plastic. They've always ever been so plastic.
I've had plastic ones in most cars, but not this one. Right. So I have plastic ones in any car that is available as a manual. It has a plastic dead pedal. But this car is a van, so it does not. It just has a. There is no dead pedal isn't a thing because you're not putting your foot there. Because it's automatic. It's only available as an automatic.
Well, you are putting your foot there. That's where you rest your foot.
No, you just put your foot on the floor because you're never going to be like rotating it into the clutch spot.
I don't know. I drive a manual, so I don't really pay attention to what I do.
You know what? I bet you 99% of people don't pay attention to where their feet are either. They get in the car and their feet go where they go.
I hardly pay attention to where I am.
Yep.
Is that light red?
Oh, man. There's been times where I have gotten home and not realized how I got there. And I'm not talking like I've been drinking or anything. I just go like I went on autopilot.
Mm-hmm. And there's a name for it. I can't remember what it is, but.
Yeah. Anyways. Jesse, what have you been up to? Hopefully not driving around on autopilot.
No, because actually a friend has had the Jeep, so I have had no way to do that. But basically a whole lot of nothing. Still playing Dreamlight Valley. Still haven't went to the Monsters, Inc. world. I just keep doing stuff in the valley. Yeah. Also, in good news, 3 weeks after I ordered it, my stained glass kit is finally on its way to me. So I should be able to actually mess with stained glass hopefully this weekend, but we'll see because, you know, my local post office might still give it to the wrong person because they've done that before. So I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic. We'll say that. So
you're going to say it finally arrived. Oh, it's only just shipped.
Oh my God. It's been a lot.
What a joke.
Pretty much like everything that could go wrong on the michaels.com website did go wrong, including me discovering a bug wherein my order doesn't show up in my account. I don't like discovering bugs on sites that aren't Instructables and Tinkercad. I really hate it. I would not recommend. So, but beyond all of that, I am picking out what I'm going to do first. I think I might do this like circular moon pattern and a honeycomb pattern just to try out curves and straight edges before I attempt my pattern. Because I'm sort of hoping that like I'll have enough knowledge at that point that I'll know if what I've drawn in the pattern is going to work or not. Who knows if that is actually true, but that's what I'm hoping. Yeah, I think that's it.
I definitely think... It seems like you're putting barriers up to moving forward with this. Okay, if you guys laugh at my segues.
I don't think it does, though.
Okay.
I think Michaels is putting the barrier up.
Yes, Michaels has put the barrier in front of me, but I was a victim to a barrier.
No, I would actually say that it actually is part of the barriers that I want to talk about because – it is something that external locus of control, things that are outside of your control, people often, as soon as it's outside of their control, they press the order button. They no longer feel like they're in control of it, which is oftentimes true. And for something like a hobby, a fun thing that you just want to get done, yeah, you kind of got to wait. But if this was your business, if you needed that material, there would be a lot more things you'd be willing to do. You'd be breaking down these barriers of whatever Michaels is doing. You'd be looking other places. You'd be trying to find, is there somewhere else I can get this done? If you had a deadline, if you had a business running on this order.
The thing is, I feel like I do have a deadline. April 30th is our deadline, so I was panicking. But like that kit costs $237, which is more than I've spent on supplies in a very long time. So I just could not convince myself to spend even more somewhere else and then have to wait and see if I was going to get my money back for the first order.
I understand completely, and I'm not trying to like fault you for it at all. I'm more talking the hypothetical. Like, there are cases where, you know, people come across these. You hear these like, "Oh, I tried my hardest, but the business just didn't work." And then you listen to like what they actually tried, and you go, "I guess your hardest isn't the same level as my heart." Like, I would have gone a little bit further, and I guess. You can always say that, if, you know, sitting in the cheap seats is really easy to criticize someone's efforts. But it is definitely one of those things where, you know, there's always places you can point out where something didn't go right.
Who are you calling out?
Myself. Always. And because I would have to say that I probably put barriers to in my making all, like 99% of the time, whether it's time, like time is like my biggest one. Like, I don't really have enough time to do that thing. Right. I don't have I never have the time to do that whole thing ever. There's never a time where I just go like, I got a month off. I'll just sit like I did. I took a month off doing my trailer. Still didn't get it done in the time. You know what I mean? Like there's never going to be enough time to do whatever you think you want to do. There's always going to be another day.
Yeah. Well, on the topic of barriers with our client projects, I've designed everything I need to design. I've got it ready to go, but my printer's still not working. So there's my barrier. Mm-hmm. I got some new Bowden tube, replaced it. It did the same thing again. So I'm pretty much positive that it's the heat. What's it called?
Hot end.
The hot end is the issue. So I'm waiting on the replacement, like direct drive one, which should hopefully fix everything. But we'll see.
Yeah, it is. Like, so for me, like barriers can be as simple as. I walk out to the shop and there's stuff on the bench.
Yep.
And I just turn around and I walk back inside. And I like, that is like one of those things that like, it shouldn't be a thing that stops you, but it definitely is. Like I've had times where it's like, I'm trying to sew something and the bobbin runs out of, the bobbin runs out of thread. And I'm like, I guess I'm not sewing anything. I'm just fucking done with this shit. Right.
Mm.
So plus one for the bobbin running out. I have seriously been like sewing a quilt at midnight and have that happen. And I just leave everything, turn it off and go to bed. Like I'm just like,
yeah.
I don't care anymore. And then I kind of forgot. I was going to say, what were we talking about before that? What was the,
stuff on the bench.
Yeah, the mess.
Oh, right. So my problem is that I just turned that into the new project. So I'm still going
to say the same thing.
The same amount of time doing something.
Yeah. I was going to say the same thing. Like if I walk out and the bench is a mess, it just means I'm not doing that project. I'm cleaning for the next however long it's going to take. And it's going to take me longer than that because I'm going to get distracted trying to work out where to put things so it doesn't happen again, even though it will.
At least I have stuff super organized. So it's like just a matter of me stop being lazy and put stuff back. Like I've at least got that down. But yeah, I think sometimes I like cleaning and organizing more than anything else.
Yeah, I feel the same. And I've said that to my wife. Like if everything has a place, I have not much issue keeping stuff clean. Like if I'm working on the bike or whatever, if I finish with a socket, it goes straight back into the drawer and I get out the next socket I need because I've got a spot for it. Before I had that, it would just sit on the bench ready for me to pack away later.
Yeah, and this is one of those, like, barriers. And this is, like, there's, like, you're halfway through a project. Do you put all the sockets away?
No, because I put them away as I'm done. I don't sit a socket down. Unless the only time I sit it down is if I'm changing to another bit to take out a bolt, knowing I'm going to need to take out the next bolt with the same bit. But right, I'm not going to have, like, 50 out.
Well, you haven't worked on complicated cars that require 50 fucking different sockets to get to the part that you need to replace. Because sometimes that happens. And you're like, well, do I put them all away? Because at some point, the efficiency of putting them all away and knowing where they are is, you know, a barrier to completing the project because you're running back and forth the toolbox the whole time.
Well,
but at another point, if you don't get it finished in a reasonable amount of time, you're like, fuck, I can't find any of these goddamn wrenches because it's been 5 days or 5 months since I started this fucking thing.
Well, I think that's the other thing too, is that, like, if I was in a bigger space, then I probably would do that more. But if I'm working on the bike, I literally turn around and I have the drawer open and just, like, instead of sitting it down on the bench underneath the bike, I just sit it down on the drawer where it belongs. Like, but yeah, if I had to walk across the shop to do that, then yeah.
See, I think about it like when working on the race car, especially at the racetrack, it is like a makeshift place to work at best.
Yeah.
So like I've changed a transmission. I know I can go to the toolbox and grab 90% of the tools I know I'll need to change the transmission. And I bring them to the car we're working on, right?
Yeah.
But the problem is then later, sometimes, like, you know, if I'm changing the transmission and it doesn't get done in that whatever, and I need to go work on another race car, I can't find the tools because they're in the other spot, and that puts a barrier.
Yeah.
But it's like you have to, like, trade one barrier for another barrier, right? Trade one efficiency for another.
Mm.
Knowing where the tools are at all times is an efficiency. Putting back every single socket at the second you stop using it is inefficient if you have to walk towards it, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, in saying that, if I'm working out on the car out in the garage, out of the garage, I'm not walking back every time I've finished with the socket to put it away. I'm putting it on the ground next to me and grabbing the next one I need. So,
correct.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, you probably put them all away even if you're not done.
I do.
Right.
I never used to, but I do now. I'm very, like, I have gotten very stressed and anal about my organization lately because I have always lived, like, you can even see it now on camera. It's not the cleanest behind me, but it's because I've been doing stuff. But I have always lived coming out to just a mess everywhere. And I got sick of it. Like, even if I take tools with me in the car to do stuff, I've got a little duffel bag that I bought for like $6 that I put all the tools in, and I always put them back in there at the end so that I can just bring them back and empty the bag back into where it all goes. Because I got sick of tools being left all throughout the car.
Yep.
Yeah, that is fair. I am a basket person. So like that is my efficiency, I guess, is that I just gather things. So I can bring them all over like a strange raccoon. I just like, I don't know why it just works for my brain. And then I'm not constantly having to go back and forth because I think also working in Pier 9 with Instructables, that was such a big building. And if I left something, I would normally have to go up the stairs, down the stairs to the other end of the building. I think that sort of ingrained a little bit in me because there were definitely times where I forgot a bunch of stuff and was like, oh, do I really want to do this? Maybe I should just go make cookies or something, you know?
Yeah. Well, there's been times where I'm like out in the garage working on something. I go, this would make a really good video, but the GoPros, like I used to take every week, the GoPro that if you're watching this on YouTube, the GoPro that's attached that you're watching this through, is the GoPro I filmed 90% of my YouTube content with.
Mm.
And it has sat here for over a year because I've not filmed any YouTube videos. And part of it is because I use it for this. But I think that's like a mental barrier I put in place to stop me from doing it. You know, like there's nothing that's like I could use my cam. Like I can use – I've filmed on my camera, on my phone, my camera phone. What is this, 2003?
hey, Grandpa.
yeah. So I've used my phone on my camera, right? I can do that. I just turn my camera sideways. Like I don't – not everything needs to be real. Right. Mm. I can do that. Like, it's not a problem, but I just have this, like, I set up barriers. And I think like a lot of people set up barriers to, they don't want to do something because it might take 5 extra minutes and they'll sit there and think about it for 20 instead of doing the thing that takes 5. And I'll bring it back to like ShopSmith. So ShopSmith tools, a lot of people go, it's so hard. You got to change it. The tools is going to take, I'm slow. It'll take me 5 minutes to change between tools, which is like, if you do it all the time, it takes like 30 seconds, but say it takes 5. Well, guess what? Everything takes time and everything is inefficient. And you always have to trade off inefficiencies with everything else you're doing. And if you're running a business, you want to find those barriers, you want to find those inefficiencies, and you want to take them down. But if you have a hobby and your hobby needs to like shove itself in a corner at the end of the day, then guess what? It's never going to be efficient. And you need to realize that, and you need to go like, this is what I can deal with, and accept the fact that things may not be the most efficient that they could be.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, okay, it takes 5 minutes to change the tool in the ShopSmith or whatever, but you're gaining space because you're not having 50 different tools. You're gaining, you're getting both. You're gaining and also losing. Like, it's not as efficient as if you just had all the tools ready to go, but you still have to move all around the shop to change from tool to tool and set up each tool and everything anyway. Is it really that much more work? Like if you go from lathe to dual press, okay, it takes you a couple of minutes to change it from the lathe to the drill press, but you've still got to turn off the lathe, get the wood off it. Like everything's still going to take time.
And this is where I think you really need to like evaluate why you're out there. And this is where I think a lot of people get in trouble with setting up barriers is because they've turned their hobby into a business, which is like, sometimes that's great. Like you want to do that, amazing. And you want to actually turn it into an actual business, great. But a lot of people start taking their hobby as a business and trying to make it make money to like, I don't know, zero out the fact that it's a hobby and like, oh, my hobby pays for itself. But then all of a sudden, like, you're like, instead of like going out to the shop to have fun in your hobby, you're like trying to like efficiently master the most effective way of making cutting boards. And it's like, okay, just is that what you actually, if that's what you want to do and that's what you have fun with, great. But if it's not what you actually want to do, don't put those barriers there for you.
For a business, I can definitely understand like trying to be efficient and stuff. But as you said, for a hobby, it's like people that want a table saw and then a table saw dedicated with a dado stack.
Yeah.
You don't need two table saws for a hobby. I can understand for a business when you're trying to pump things out quickly.
And I'll put this out there. If you have the space and you have the money, do whatever it takes.
Do whatever you want.
Do whatever you want. Do whatever you want. You want to have 17 different grinders that all have different belts on them? Do it. Because I know people who do that. They're just like, I don't like changing belts. It makes it so that I don't enjoy my hobby. Great. I don't like changing blades. So I have two table saws. One's a rip cut. One's a cross cut. Right? Great. That's wonderful. I don't care. Right? If you have the space, but don't make it the reason that you're not doing your hobby is because you don't have two table saws. right? Then the reason you're not doing your hobby is because you didn't actually like your hobby in the first place.
I think there's also something that can be said about perfectionism. There, I know a lot of people, not going to name any names, but there are many people that I know who are very interested in something, one particular form of making, and they have bought and bought and bought and bought everything that they would ever need. I think with the idea that when they do it, it's all going to go so well. They're going to be amazing at it. Like, it's just, it's almost like you become like a make hoarder and you're not really thinking about it rationally anymore. Like, right. It becomes something you might not ever do because your expectations are so high and so unrealistic. And having all that stuff doesn't make you an expert. Experience.
So I was watching a YouTube video. My brother wanted me to make him like those 3D cube looking cutting boards. Mm-hmm. He's like, can you do this? And I was like, of course I can do anything, but I have never done it. Sure. Let's watch a fucking YouTuber do it. And so we're watching, like, over the weekend, I'm watching this YouTuber and he has this ginormous warehouse of a shop. And you can tell he's setting it up to start a business. And he is talking about it as a little bit as if he is an expert and then saying, but this is my first time. This is what you need to do. But this is my first time, so I didn't quite do it right here. And I'm like, so you've done it twice? And like, I get, like, I've told people how to do something, but I've never gone like, this is what you need to do. I've always gone like, this is what I did. And I watched this guy and he's like, the amount of mistakes he makes making, and he clearly is like, I can make money making cutting boards. That is what his thing is. That is what it seems like he is going to do. And he's also going to make money making videos about making money about making cutting boards. Like, and I just looked at it and just went like, great that you are documenting and sharing it, your experience. I have no problem with that. It's the like gravitas or like the prop. I don't even know what to say. The confidence that they have in sharing it and explaining it as if they know it, which I get myself into that way sometimes, but it is so frustrating to watch and go like, you are screwing these up. And then he later goes, I screwed these all up. And I'm like, yeah, no shit you did. Right. Like,
It's amazing how many people don't realize that you actually need experience. It's not the tools doing all the work. Yeah. All these people, like, you know, the comments of like, oh, if I had, I got my first comment of this the other day, actually, if I had $10,000 worth of tools, I could build that too. No, you couldn't, because then you could build it without those tools.
Right. Well, this is where, like, you know, if I know, I look at my garage, like I forgot that comment. And I look at my garage and I go, holy fuck, I wish I had $10,000 worth of tools.
Yeah.
I'm using like a, you know, a 1960s table saw, you know, a 1980s router base that I have to like clamp to a table, and people are like, I get that same comment, and then I get the next comment is like, I can't believe you use that shitty router table. And I'm like,
yes.
Like, you know, I don't know what else to do. But okay, yes. This is like, we're getting a little bit off topic. Oh, the barriers.
You
know,
before you do move on, I do have to say, it's on the lap table video that I put out. I literally used a drill and a $200 track saw.
Hey, man.
How is that?
Track saw, you got $10,000 for the tools.
My track saw was $200. It's a piece of shit.
Anyways, so it actually, you know what? I can bring this right back into barriers, because a lot of people, that guy included, think they need $10,000 worth of tools in order to make something. And you know what? That is wrong. If you want to make something, you can make something with just about any tool, right? You do not need expensive tools to make something. You can probably find tools in the garbage or on free on Kijiji to make something. Is it going to be the most efficient way? No. Is it going to be the best quality? Well, that's up to you. Because a poor craftsman, poor craftsman blames his tools, right?
Yeah, you always blame your tools.
I've never blamed my tools. I always blame myself.
A good carpenter always blames his tools.
Oh, I'm a bad carpenter. I always blame the cock. But
see, the thing is, right, like you look at someone that does like wood by right. I don't even know if he's still around or whatever, but
yeah,
like all his stuff is made with hand tools, right? Or it used to. See, I haven't seen his videos for ages, so I don't know if maybe he's moved into power tools. But all these people are like, oh, I need all these expensive power tools. Or no, you need a handsaw, a hand drill, or even just a cheap drill. Like, does it? These people that this person that commented, do they look at what brand tools I'm using? Like,
well, no, you will get the same comments of like, oh, that's clearly garbage because you're using Ryobi. Right.
Yeah.
And they're like the barrier in their mind is like, if I don't have good tools, I can't make good stuff. And that's also untrue. And yeah. I know I'll rag on Ryobi. It's mainly because I think the color reminds me of puke. And that's the main reason why I don't like them. Their blue was great. I loved blue Ryobi tools, but their green, I just, but that is the whole thing. Like, I just don't, you can never, if your barrier to making something is the tools, you'll never be a successful maker.
Yeah, exactly.
You're only limited by your creativity.
In saying that, tools can be the issue sometimes. I've had tools that will not fucking work right. My old miter saw would never cut a fucking 90-degree angle, and it pissed me off. I wish that you could buy a miter – well, it wouldn't be called a miter saw, but a drop saw that doesn't do miters. It's just permanently 90.
Yeah, they used to sell those.
Yeah. Now you've got to buy these massive – yeah. What are those things where the blade comes from the bottom?
No. But anyways, I agree because I now have like a compound, like sliding 700 different degree miter. Yeah. And I fucking hate it because like if I push on it, I can make I've just lightly push on it the wrong way. I can make the cut not square.
It's like you have to race that it's a 90 every cut.
It's not even, it's worse than that. I can push one way or pull one way and it's a different degree. And I'm like, I shouldn't be able to do this. This should be like strong enough that it's not that way. Mm. That being said, if I really want a super fucking fine 90 degree cut, there's 1,000 other ways to do it.
Yeah.
Not blaming that tool for my 90s being off. I will never, ever in my life use it for picture frames. Because it will not do it, right? Like you would need to have the picture frames where like wood putty makes up every one of the corners. But
that sounds like something I'd make.
Yeah, true. I don't know. So we were in the pre show. We were talking about some like psychological barriers to making, and this kind of past week, I've kind of had that, like I've wanted to get out there and do stuff, but I've also been like, I've had like a couple different like problems. Like one is like wanting to get out there, but there's just so much to do.
Mm.
So I don't even know where to start. So I have that like psychological problem, but then I have like the other problem of like, am I like good enough? So the Make What You Fear project or challenge that's going on by the Working Hands podcast, what I wanted to do for those watching, you may be able to see in the side, there's a chair. So that chair is something that my grandmother and grandfather redid a long time ago. And now I have a couple of them and they're ready to be redone again. They've probably, like as far as I can remember, so 40 years, they've been this way. And it was longer than that. And I have pictures of like my grandmother or grandfather and me in that as a kid. And, you know, things can only last so long. You know, fabric just wears out if you use it. So they're ready to be redone again. And I'd like to do that as a make what you fear, but I'm like, you know, like that, like if I screw it up, like how many of these chairs exist? And I know the answer because we have all five of them, and they're from the doctor's lounge at Hotel Dew. But it's like, I get like that, make what you fear, like do the thing you feared, get it done with, like challenge you, break that barrier that you've had. And I'd really love to, but I just can't for some reason. I can't bring myself to removing the fabric because it's so sun faded. You can't even do it. Like, I want to put leather on them. I don't know why. That's just what I want to do. And, you know, like sand down the wood and just, you know, re-varnish it all or whatever. But I just can't, I don't know, can't do it.
I think the problem is that you're putting too much sentimentalness into the chairs.
Yeah,
like
100%.
The set, yeah, of course. But the sentiment is the chair, not the fabric that's on the chair.
It's more I question my abilities.
Yeah.
So I could bring it to a place that does restorations and reupholstering, and they would do it. I know because my dad has two that my aunt got done. They look so exactly like this, and they got redone, and now they are dark stained with new fabric, and they look, you know, great for if that's what you're going for.
So your issue is the actual like rewrapping of the chair and doing that work, or pulling it apart?
Oh, I could pull it apart, but once you pull it apart, now you're stuck with it's no longer a chair.
Yeah, but what I was going to get at is that you could always attempt and then take it somewhere if you don't feel comfortable to finish it.
Yeah, that's admitting defeat I'm not good with. If I never start it, maybe that's like a barrier to something, but if I never start it, I can't admit defeat.
Yeah. My problem is I find it so hard to admit I can't do something, and then I just do a shit job.
Fair. Yeah, I've done that before. I guess I look at it and go, my grandfather and grandmother did this.
Yeah.
So they took these chairs, they were being thrown out by the hospital, and they recovered them. So I should be able to do it. I have all the tools they had, and I have nicer and better tools and more, like, I guess I don't have all the knowledge they had, but I definitely have all the tools they had because I got all my grandfather's tools. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, I got nothing. And then, like, my grandmother, obviously, like, she had sewing shit, and I got sewing shit. Like, I don't know what else I could possibly need other than, like, the knowledge of how to do something. But I'll never figure that out without doing it. I guess I worry that if I fuck it up, I won't be able to take it to a place. I'll fuck it up so bad that the place will go, I don't know where to start. You fucked this up so bad.
Okay, so I'm just going to give a little bit of unsolicited advice here. With most upholstery, you're not going to fuck it up in a way that will completely ruin it until you're like at the very end of the project. Because a lot of the finishing touches, like the brads and stuff that you add, can't fuck up the base of the chair. Like, I would say just go for it and just don't go too far if it makes you nervous.
Start on one.
Right. So the other thing is, so
you got five, you only need four.
So I've got two. I mean, my dad's house, he has three. One of them is still original. It is a different pattern than this one. So there was four that were the same pattern, and then there's one that was different. I don't know why. I don't know. They must have ran out of, like, they didn't have a lot of money. So I'm sure they just used whatever fabric they had or got on sale or whatever. It's like some sort of weird floral pattern. So whatever. But, pattern. And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I definitely want to do it. I would like to make it that challenge, but I have if anything, like Keith is very judgmental in a good way. Like, he'll call it as he sees it and says like, you fucked that up. And I'm afraid to like let Keith down. I don't know. It's like a big reason why I didn't like do the maker swap at like, and then I watched some of the shit and I went, some of that shit's like amazing. Wow. That's a like way above what I could ever make. And I looked at some of the other shit. And I went, no, I could have done better than that. Right. Like,
like what?
I don't know. I'm not going to call out any particular.
Yeah, not calling anyone out tonight.
Always, you can always look and go like, you're even putting yourself in a place can be problematic and create a barrier, because by slotting yourself into somewhere, you've now created like a little area that you feel like you're better or worse than other people. And if I could like get around my mind and stop comparing myself to others and even stop comparing myself to my previous self, I would get so much more done. Because a big part of like the problems I have with getting things done today is that I look back and I go, I know so much more than Grant of 5 years ago. So you shouldn't, you should do it 5 years better. Right.
But the thing is, though, that some people are better than others. Like, there's some people that we know that are much better than the three of us.
No, not combined. And that you, but yeah.
Yeah. There are.
If we took all of our combined efforts, no way.
These people are still better than us.
I know. I'm just joking.
Do you know who they are?
Well, I don't think we're there yet.
But our patrons, well, we are.
Well, no,
we're 50
we're
minutes in.
We got to first talk about the clamp challenge, because we've had our very first clamp challenge post.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good try. Adam, yeah, just trying to say,
well, fucked your segue, so you can fuck mine.
So Jerry Hajduk is the first person to have posted in the clamp challenge hashtag. It was a story, so it's gone by now. But he posted his profile. It is on our profile, but it is not like you can't find it on a post. I don't know, like the highlights. Does anyone actually go to highlights? No one does. I know Jesse's saying, yes, I do. But other than Jesse, not a single person in the entire world has ever gone to a highlight. So the clamp challenge, in case this is the very first time you've ever heard of it, it's a make a project that involves a clamp or many clamps, because you can never have enough, and turn that clamp or into something functional, artistic, or just plain fun, and you'll have a chance to win great prizes. The project has to be a new project that is completed between the start, which was March 1st, 2024, and the end, April 30th, 2024. And by the way, you can combine this with your Make What You Fear. You could have a clamp challenge / Make What You Fear. If you fear clamps, boom, you're good to go. To enter, all you need to do is post your project on Instagram with the hashtag #ClampChallenge2024 and tag ClampCast by the 30th of April for your chance to win. The full information is available on ClampCast.com/clamp-challenge. Just go to ClampCast.com and you'll find it there. Sponsors so far include Chapman Manufacturing, which, by the way, if you're interested in their 5575 kit, which is a great kit that includes all their bits and their little ratchety thing and a screwdriver handle, you can use clamp24 and get 15% off, as well as Housemade Industrial and IsoTunes are also providing some amazing prizes. I'm very interested to see, hopefully by next week. I know by the time we're recording this, it's only a couple days into the challenge, so we haven't gotten a lot of progress pictures, but I want to see everyone post their project pictures. If you have questions about it, you can find us on it or on our Discord. We have a Discord. We're going to have, come on over. Anyone can join the Discord. Come on over there and ask us questions or DM us on Instagram with any questions you have about the clamp challenge. I want to see progress pictures. I want to see finished photos. I want to see reels. I want to see everyone having a great time. And I also want to see our Patreon supporters helping out, especially the F-Clamp level from Scott from Dad It Yourself DIY, Joe Herdina, David Wood from DW Wood Builds, Brad from I'm Gonna Make, and Chad from Chad's Custom Creations. I want to see each one of those people. They better be putting in a clamp challenge, as well as everyone else who supports us on Patreon. If you can't support us on Patreon, it's only $1 an episode. You know, for less than a coffee an episode, you could support us for less than really a coffee a month, because 4 episodes a month, $4, you could support us. You just go on over to patreon.com/clamp, and you got access to the after show, as well as a keychain made by yours truly, which is numbered, and you get entered into the Gnome Hammer giveaway. Which is a monthly giveaway. Austin from High Caliber Camp won it last week, which I am, I think it's rigged because I wanted to win it. But yeah, next time, hopefully one of our patrons, oh, you know what? He might have actually won it because he's a patron of this show.
True.
Which is pretty cool. He might have won it because he might be a patron elsewhere as well, but he is a patron of the show. Maybe that's how he won it. So one of our patrons won the Gnome Hammer giveaway. So yeah, head on over to patreon.com/clamp and you can support us there. And now Clampmendations.
Clampmendations.
Okay. Speaking of Austin, I want to recommend everyone go check out Austin's adventure with Rust-Oleum's new spray can nozzle, which I thought was hilarious to see him show the best way of emptying a spray can in less than 3 seconds. And yeah, it was, I did not expect him to do that so quickly. It was great. I don't know if anyone's seen it. It is one of his latest reels, which it was like, I guess on Tuesday or Monday of the March, you know, 5th or 4th. Go back and look at those reels. I'm sure he's posted like 1700 reels since then, but
that's the problem.
So what happens is he was doing this like new desk, and he went through like 3 cans of spray paint, and then he had to get a 4th can to get the last coat on. And he went there, and they only had like this new can that had like a rotating cap on it, and for different spray. So I've never seen this before, but apparently in this,
you turn the little nozzle part.
Yeah, like so it's got a little nozzle. So like, if you want,
it's like a graffiti.
If you want it to be graffiti, apparently with your Rust-Oleum, this is what you need to do. So he tried to use it, and it stopped working after 3 seconds, and just clogged up and splattered paint all over the final coat of his, you know, 3 cans of fucking paint already, paint job. So he was not happy, as one can imagine. And then he also had a brand new can of paint that would not spray. So he showed the, ultimate way of getting paint out of can. And we will link to that exact reel in the show notes if you want to see it.
Speaking of rate, just shouting out to Austin all night. I've actually seen that reel done a few times, and it's usually with brake cleaner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, I have something. Through my work, I recently learned that brake clean has a most brake clean and or electrical contact cleaner has something called carbon tetrachloride in it. And carbon tetrachloride is a chemical that is really great at getting rid of grease. Mm-hmm. It's also really great at poisoning humans. And it is especially bad for humans who drink alcohol. And it will just basically, if you drink alcohol, you're like 10 times more likely to die from an exposure to it. That would be a lethal, like, you're 10 times more likely to get a lethal toast.
I don't see this carbon thing.
Carbon tetrachloride, CTC, it might be described. You got to look at the STS, the safety data sheet.
Well, it says it contains petroleum, light, aleph, attic, isopropyl,
propyl, whatever it is, alcohol, acetate, propane, and butane.
Right. So there are non – so there's the brake clean has been getting away from it. It used to be. So if you have worked on cars for a long time and you realize your brake clean doesn't work like it used to, that's because they took the carbon tetrachloride out of it. So
– oh, wait. Propellant, hydrocarbon.
Yeah, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. No. Well, it's still not good for you. But
is that why my brake cleaner hasn't been cleaning the grease off the ground like I bought it for?
Yep. So the carbon tetrachloride and or chlorine was the way that it was really good at cleaning it. Anyways, if you are like me and enjoy a beverage from time to time and also enjoy brake clean as the product to get shit clean from grease, don't do them at the same time. Because you can get liver damage very easily. And it was pretty much unregulated in the 70s. And for some reason, it came up during my work as in defense.
It's insane how many things aren't realized to be unsafe. I saw a reel today and it was an ad for asbestos tiles. And it was like some woman laying them out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So asbestos in the 1950s. Tiles. Right. They were asbestos, and it's still being sold today, is and was an amazing product for fire safety. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it's unfortunately also causes lung cancer or mesothelioma. I can't say those words, so that's why I'm not a doctor. All that to say is you should definitely be looking into the products a little bit more deeply, because you are, and I know Austin's going to hate this, but like there's often times that the government's not even protecting you, even though they are trying, they are not able to because private industry is so involved.
Corporations are people too, Grant.
All right, Jesse, what corporation would you like to?
Yeah, I don't think Jesse deserves a clamp nation after that. Yeah.
So this week, because my brain is soup, I did not have an Instructables author to recommend. So I'm just going to recommend one of my favorite artists and also a great podcast host, Andrea Gazzetta. I will put her Instagram handle in the show notes. Her art is beautiful. It's very pastel, but also like very dark themed in a lot of like cases. And that is something I'm really into. She also was a previous host of the Cult podcast, which I love a lot. And then Podvant-Garde, which was a art podcast she was doing with a couple of awesome ladies that ended. But I love everything she does. She's super talented, and yeah, I think everyone should go look at her art because there's something for everyone there. Yeah.
Nice. Pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My Clampman Nation is a video by Do It With Dan. It's called Icon, and it's him unveiling the wrap of his Corvette that he's built. But the video, the intro to the video, is so good. Like he... I have multiple questions for him, but one, like the video itself, like the intro is just so well done. It's fully like a scripted sort of like played out thing and everything and all this, but he puts in real music. Well, all music's real music, but he puts in like the beginning as the video starts with Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue. Like he puts in like all this music, and he does say later on in the video, like he won't get any ad revenue from it because it's copyrighted music. But I want to know how he gets away with it, because even if it's copyrighted or whatever, usually they won't let you, like they'll take the video down, not just not give you money.
They don't for music. They just take the money and give it to the artist.
Give it to the artist.
Yeah.
Right. So why am I spending so much? Why am I spending so much time trying to find copyright-free music when I can't even claim ad revenue anyway?
Because you couldn't claim ad revenue. Because until very recently, if you had under 1,000, there were no ads on your page. So they would just take down your – because there's There was no way for them to make money, so they would just take it down. But with the advent of shorts and the whole, like, well, fuck, shorts can get music from anywhere, all of a sudden, like, things change, and now they're putting ads on people's platforms that are under...
Yeah. Okay, right. Yeah, right.
That's part of it. It's a very... The whole thing with ad revenue and music is very strange.
Yeah.
But
anyway, the video is amazing. Like, just at least just watch like the beginning, and then once he's sitting in front of the Corvette talking, you can turn it off. But just the actual like intro thing that they did was so good. Cause like the guy I've recommended before, Chase on Two Wheels, he does like camera production stuff as well. He's got a massive gantry thing on the back of a car that's permanently there with like a gimbal and all that sort of stuff. So like the shots they got of everything, and yeah, it's so good.
So I've looked at the wrap or whatever you want to call it, the livery, and it looks like a Marlboro.
It is.
It's a take. It's a take. It's a take on Marlboro.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, it is. He says in the video that it is that, but he also like, there's like second scene, he gets out a packet of Marlboro and lights one of them. And
okay.
Like it's a full thing. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't get that. I guess I didn't see that. Oh, you know what? I see it now.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay. So good times, good times. Let me get back into the Google Doc that we use. Now it's time for Ask Us Anything.
Ask Us Anything. So this week, the Ask Us Anything question comes from Warren Matten. So often a day job supports the making that we love more. What's the best job for a maker? Investor? I think working at a makerspace or some sort of creative technology hub is probably the way to go. Or what I did previously, which was a full-time corporate content creator, which was fantastic. Being able to just make stuff and not have a bunch of contracts with a bunch of random people that I have to hunt down. Yeah.
I think it depends on the type of making.
Prostitute. I mean.
Oh, my God.
Are you making prostitutes?
No, that's, I think that's the
best
job.
Let's go to a sex ring and you're not allowed to do that.
Well, where?
Isn't it against the law to make a prostitute ring?
Depends on where you live.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know everywhere.
Anyway, moving on. See, like for me, my job is perfect for if everything's digital on the computer because I have so much time that I can work on it. But I don't know.
I would say the best job that supports the making that we love. I guess it all depends on why you do the making. Because I think a job where you make is the best job. Like I think about like Housemaid and what he does. He's like solving problems, developing new products, having fun making things and making content about it. But like the products are what sustain him. The content creation is his like hobby, right? So it's like, it all like blends in together and like, it's hard to like separate, like most things is hard to separate the two. So like, if you had a day job that wasn't making, I guess is what I'm trying to get at.
As you read the question, I realized that I think we've answered it wrong. I think what he meant is our personal choice of making, what is the job, our job that would support it? Not generalized, but personal.
No, I think what he's trying to say is if your job isn't making, like he's saying investor, is investor a good job where you're like trading stocks on the daily and then going and making your garage? Sounds like a reasonable thing.
I think something along those terms, maybe not investor because that seems stressful, maybe something not so stressful, but I was always told growing up, don't make your hobby your job, right? So something that's not opposite, but something that sort of gets you away from making. Because like if you work in a makerspace, right, you're with all that all day, The last thing you want to do when you get home is go and spend time in the garage. That's not your escape anymore. You're just expanding on your job. So whereas like where, me, my making is escaping from life.
And this is where I think there's like the intellectual and the physical. And obviously making like combines the two. But a lot of times, like if you have a desk job, you want to make, you want to like physically do something. If you have a physical job, you sometimes want to like not do something so physical when you get home. Right. And I think like if I were to think of the like day job, like I would say like firefighter because they work two 24-hour shifts a week and they get the rest of the time off. And every single firefighter I know has a like a second full-on fucking business running like a store, a hunting store or something that they run 5 days a week and work the other two 24-hour shifts as a firefighter.
So they have two jobs. So,
yeah, because they're apparently making firefighter money is not enough. But
here in the U.S., they get paid like nothing. So
oh.
Yeah.
We're working 24-hour shifts.
Fuck yeah, that. You have to sleep on the job.
A lot of them are volunteer here in the U.S. too. It's interesting.
Same here. Yeah, yeah, same here.
We have
here.
A lot of volunteer firefighters. That's not the type of firefighter I'm talking about. So, volunteer firefighters still get paid, which is a weird thing to call them volunteers. But
better than here.
And you can't just like volunteer. You need to like, you still need to like...
Yeah, you have to pass the tests.
Yeah. It's all like, it's such a weird, firefighting is such a weird thing, and I don't want to get into it because I think firefighters are, I honestly don't know a single bad firefighter.
Yep.
I know lots that like do a lot of work, and I really wish I could do that much work too.
I think that's the thing though, like because they're volunteering, they want to be there. It's not, they're not doing it for money or whatever, they actually want to help people, and that's why they're good people. That's why, like, you haven't found a bad person, bad one, whatever you said.
Right. Even the ones that make money and like work the shifts and stuff,
they would have been volunteers at some point.
They could have been. Yeah. They could have been. Depends. Yeah. Everyone is different. And anyways, if I were doing a day job, that I would be like a housewife or. House husband, I guess, is what I would be. Probably not a wife. I don't know. I don't know how it all works.
It can be if you want to. It's 2024. Mm-hmm.
That's where I would say, like, my, like, a rich person's concubine. Like, and if I think about, like,
just there were had to add in artists. The rich part.
What is happening?
No, but, like, if you think about, like, artists used to have, like, they would be, like, attached to a rich person's house. Right. And that is how they supported themselves, was through the generosity and potentially other things they did for these rich people.
Right.
So if you wanted to be a maker, you wanted to be
whenever you want to stop digging.
I don't understand where this is digging. If you wanted to have the ultimate maker job, it would be like conversing with rich people and they just give you money. Conversing liberally. I want to thank TF Turning for the theme song. If you want to find us, you can find us on all the usual social media places by searching for Clampcast. And if you want to find Adam, you can find him at Maker Mackie, Jesse at Jesse Ratfink, and me at The Grant Alexander. And until next time, cheers and have a great day.
Bye.